The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised. BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime.
Oh, let's go!
Footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. It's the footy, footy, it's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is footy, footy. It's time to get this party started tonight.
BetMGM, the place for soccer in Canada, presents Footy Prime World Daily. And with that comes an end to the 2026 World Cup. It was fun. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm James Sharman. There's Amy Walsh. There's Dan Wong. There's Craig Forrest. And there's Asa Rahman. Hey, Asa. Welcome back to Footy Prime. Did you enjoy the World Cup? Are you sad that it's over?
Oh, I've enjoyed every bit of it. I think it's been a blast. It's been a lot of fun. Yeah, some great moments. I think all the things that we talked about going into the tournament kind of came true. We had some, the top players performing at a high level. One of the things we talked about going into the tournament was all the controversy, the ticket prices, all this sort of stuff. And I think it was on the show, and I said I was a little bit worried or nervous that the second we have these golden moments, we'd forget about all that. And that kind of happened as well. And it is a little unfortunate because I think they kind of got the pricing of these tickets right. When you look at the sold-out stadiums, it's just really unfortunate from a fan standpoint. From a business standpoint, it's great for a business, right? Like, they made all the money in this capitalist, consumerist World Cup.
And Asa, you know he was messing with you, right? He was just messing with you on that question.
That it's over?
Yeah.
Because I mean, we're still reflective on the thing, though, right?
keep going.
Done.
I got no interest talking about the match. I got no interest whatsoever. So keep going. Let's talk about the business more.
Yeah, exactly. I got you, Charms. No problem.
Thanks, pal. Yeah, he's got my back. No. It's we're actually recording this on what day is it? Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm. That's where you are. Yeah,
we're hearing this on Thursday morning or 2 p.m. on Thursday on SiriusXM. We know England lost to Argentina. So it's going to be Argentina-Spain in the final, which is fun.
Yes, it is. It.
Third place game, Saturday. That'll be a good one. France-England. Okay, let's...
No, before we do this, Sharms, I read... Craig and I were having a discussion, and I read him a tweet. And this is one of my most favorite tweets by our host tonight, James Sharman. A couple of hours have passed. I've gone for a walk, had a hot shower, enjoyed a bite to eat with my wife, and I'm still just as angry as I was at the final whistle. And I'm like, yeah, pretty much. It's a pretty
anger
much
is the overriding emotion, honestly, for me right now. It's not sadness, disappointment. It's not even frustration. It's pure raw anger, because
that's a better emotion, though. It's a better, right? Sadness
healthier?
Is
it's healthier.
It's, I think it is healthier.
It's more tangible.
Yeah. As long as your high blood anger. Pressure doesn't.
He'll get to the sadness, though. It's just the stage he's at currently. Tomorrow or the next day.
No, I don't, because I said it tonight on Sportsnet that my anger will probably remain until the Euros kick off in 2 years' time, and then the hope will return. There's hope, anger, hope, anger, hope, anger. That's the cycle. There's no acceptance. There's no sadness or anything in bereavement.
Are you surprised by this, Sharms? Because I think you were talking last time about how the Canada games affected you more, you thought. Mm-hmm. But is this like affecting you more than you anticipated?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
It really is. During that match, I woke up this morning and I said in the podcast on Wednesday morning, I had butterflies in my stomach, which I didn't expect. And then the game kicks off, and I had an emotion that I hadn't felt for a while. And then they scored the goal to go up 1-0. And I was a little bit misty-eyed thinking, oh, my God, this could be it. This could be a final for England at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Now I realize that's just never going to happen. I'm not getting any younger. I'm never going to see my team win the World Cup, because they will choke every fucking time they get an opportunity.
Yeah, what is 4 say? It's the hope that kills you every
407.
Time?
407. Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah, 407.
That was the
time. Yeah. You got to admit that England really, after they scored, they really stepped on the front foot and kept going to try to finish off the game. Didn't you think, Charms?
Yeah, I think, Craig.
They were real protagonists after that, weren't they?
But listen, let's try and remove my emotions here for a second.
Yeah.
From the outsider looking in, who hasn't got perhaps skin in the game or that passionate about this, you must have watched this game and thought, okay, England played pretty well. So did Argentina. It was a pretty close battle. I think England probably had the edge. They're up 1-0. And then for some reason, they go uber defensive, like uber defensive. There was 12% possession after they got 1-0, 12% for England. And you just, I said, give Argentina, the world champions, the team with the GOAT, all the time and space they want to attack for 20, actually 30 minutes, including added time. What is Thomas Tuchel thinking? He was brought in not to do that. That's what Gareth Southgate did. That's what Fabio Capello did. That's what Sven-Göran Eriksson did. That's what Kevin Keegan did. That's what Steve McClaren did. Everyone else, this guy was different, we were told.
There's the anger again. It's back.
You guys take over now.
Honestly, I think that it was the worst managerial decisions I think I've ever seen. I don't think this game will be remembered for that. For a side that goes 1-0 up, toe-to-toe, doing well, defending well, getting at them, having some possession, and they decide, no, we're going to take Gordon off. We're going to take Declan Rice off. We're going to put defenders on. They had six defenders on the pitch. And they're going to defend with five at the back, six at the back, and leave Messi wide open on the right-hand side to just pick out crosses. It was just insane. I've just never seen anything so poorly managed in my life, certainly in at that level. I'm just shocked by it.
Yeah. I think the substitutions are the most puzzling part, because I don't think that they, especially I watched some of the highlights over and over again, I don't think they gave them space. They just couldn't close down the same way. Like, there are a few times they were just late, and on the two goals, it's Messi doing Messi things, where like help comes both times and he beats two people with a pass, takes to the outside. Like, those are just, I feel like there are a few moments, especially, and then there's the other part where it's later in a game, it's after 70 minutes and stuff, and then you can't close as well. So I don't know, like, yeah, I guess to play devil's advocate here, like, I don't know if in these situations it's the coach saying, like, don't press. I think sometimes it's the players can't press late in games, and then you just naturally are more defensive, you know? And then Tuchel after the match as well said that he brought in, like, went to a back five because he felt that there were gaps and he just kind of wanted to limit that. So I do wonder, like, yeah, as a manager, you have to make these moves. Like, you see that Argentina realizes that they're a goal down and have the ability to possess more of the ball. They're tidy in possession and they want to advance a little bit more as opposed to just be comfortable or a little bit more casual and pragmatic. They're being more aggressive as well. And then I think defensively it's tough. Like, you can't just go chasing and lunging all over the place either. So you're trying to close, I think, in some of these situations. And then you got to give Argentina credit in some of these moments because they're able to just pass around, similar to what we saw Spain do to France, where it's like France is supposed to be this team that's great, and then Spain's able to just knock it around them. And it's not like France or England were trying to be defensive here. You can't get the ball sometimes against great teams.
This message is brought to you by Tim Hortons at participating restaurants in Canada for a limited time.
Introducing Tim's Taste of the Globe, a limited time squad of globally inspired Timbits and iced cap flavors.
And trust us, this lineup came to play.
We're talking a Brazilian lime cheesecake Timbit,
a French chocolate creme brulee Timbit,
an Italian cappuccino Timbit,
and a Canadian fireworks Timbit,
plus a Mexican caramel churro ice cap that absolutely deserves a chant.
It's game on at Tim's with the new Timbits and ice cap flavors from around the globe.
Try them all today.
I will.
I know you will. Now back to the show.
I think the substitution sent a message, don't you think, Dubs?
Yes.
Like, I really do. Like, it just sent a message that we're going to sit back and we're going to invite pressure. And that's what they did. And against a team that has the ability to play in a phone booth, like, they're used to that deep block, and you're going to survive nearly 45 minutes playing like that? No, you got no chance. You really don't.
is Konza who comes on, I think, for Gordon. So that was the signal. So even if you're not telling your team to be passive, to stand off, to give the other team license to and the green light to pass around you and to have full possession and to dictate to you and to push you even further back, that's what you're communicating, you know, whether it's overt or not. It's subtle, and then everybody assumes that energy. And then your next two substitutions are Nico O'Reilly and Dan Byrne, Big Dan Byrne. And we know why he's in, because they're able to whip the crosses in. But there's a way to do it, to sit back a little bit, maybe to protect your lead, but not be as passive as they were. And that was really strange to me. And I mean, I know you just alluded to it, Asa, where you don't want to be flying in and allowing them to walk around you. But whether you're in a 5-4-1 or you're in a 4-5-1, or at one point they were, I think, in a 5-3-2, whatever shape you're assuming, you're communicating to Argentina that you're going to sit back. You guys go ahead. You have it. And then this is Craig Forrest on this morning's pod, because my daughter had had a soccer before and I went for a walk and I was listening to it. This is a direct quote. "One of the most important things for England will be set pieces. Little did they know that they would proceed to give up two on short corners with Messi orchestrating both."
Yeah.
Right. And then Jed Spence, I thought, did brilliantly for England.
Yeah.
But you see him flying in and then reticent to give Messi the left. So then Messi on his right foot sets up Fernandez. And then it's the opposite way, or sorry, his right foot for the second goal in the header. So it's just, I don't know. I think it was a moment there. We've talked about moments over and over again in this World Cup. And that was a critical one that was mismanaged altogether by Thomas Tuchel and what he communicated just energy-wise and tactics-wise to his team.
They sat so deep. Yep. They're right on top of Pickford. They didn't squeeze out fast enough.
And it really should have been more, because Pickford came up with a couple of brilliant saves. Yeah.
In the end, Argentina deserved it because of these reasons.
And McAllister hit two posts.
Yeah.
Right. And there's one thing Craig and I were once again talking before the podcast, and we were talking about what Dubs and I were speaking about on the prior day's podcast about inevitability versus predictability. And this was not a predictable game, but England made it predictable. Once they scored that first goal, we were like, oh, if they continue playing this way, this bravado, this great English game, this is amazing. And then all of a sudden they turned it into a predictable ending for Argentina. And then we went, they did this to Egypt. And they did, you know, like counting back the matches they did this to, did this to other teams.
Yeah.
And I just kind of went, you made it predictable, England. You were Tuchel'd. And now Tuchel is a verb. And I don't know if I can get past it. I like the fact that I made him a verb.
A switch that flipped. And it was, I think, Martinez post game in his comments said, up until that goal, they were the better team. And they were the better team, England was, because they were combative. They were going toe to toe with Argentina. Yeah. And then that switch was flipped by Tuchel, engineering the changes and like how they were going to sit. They were going to be passive. They went from combative to complacent. And it was just the invitation that Argentina needed to step into the game and to take over.
And think about like when we just saw yesterday with Spain and how they had the courage not to just defend and boot it, but to actually hold the ball in possession, in tight spots, in their own zone, in the attacking zone, out wide. That was able to control a game. England had none of that.
Yeah. That's the other part of it. Like the 12% that you mentioned, Charms, it's like when they did have the ball, how could they not keep it for a few minutes at least? Because
there's
no one like
made a punt. There's no one
there was no out options, no outlets.
The pressing from the front, Kane was done. He was exhausted. So was Bellingham, I think. So you got five at the back, which is absolutely okay. But you need to bring on some pace. So when you do get the ball, you can break out. They didn't do that. They brought in Dan Byrne.
Yeah.
They brought in Konza. Yeah. Yeah. Right?
Dan Byrne was in the end playing up top, like, because I was there.
Yeah.
They were so
In stoppage time was Pickford trying to find the head of Dan Byrne. Yeah. Yeah. That was it.
Yeah. So then what would have been the changes? Because they obviously needed legs. So they needed to change something up. But then I wonder about the options, right? Like, because you're Rashford. Right. The outlets. Yeah. Maybe it's Rashford, because the outlets that you have, you mentioned two of them, and they, started the match in Kane and Jude Bellingham. But yeah, outside of that, you wanted players that can keep you in possession. And that I feel like that probably could have been the play.
Well, I mean, it's one thing to say Spain did that. Well, I mean, listen, Spain, no one retains the ball better than Spain, right? Possession-wise.
No.
England's not Spain, but England can hold the ball up compared to previous editions. They have got those players. You know, Declan Rice and Elliot Anderson can hold the ball and keep it on the pitch and on the ground, right? But they didn't even have the opportunity to even try that. They just went back. You say they're predictable, Wongo. They are. That was England, predictable England at a big tournament. They've done it, like I said, over and over again. They always do it, no matter who the coach is. I just don't, it's a mind, some kind of mind cramp that, you know, the minute a coach assumes that job and signs his contracts, something, the ink in the paper or something, brainwashes him. So, you know, you'll do a good job until we really need some you know, great coaching in a big game. And guess what? You're going to switch off and revert back to type.
I think you talked about bravery.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, you were talking about getting older. You were talking about getting older and not being able to see England win a World Cup. What about those poor old guys who were dressed as knights that they kept showing? And I'm like,
the Three Lions. What are the Three Lions? Yeah.
Three Lions, the Knights. I was like, you guys never see anyone that win.
The English office. You see the English office when Brent gets fired. And he's behind his desk and he's being fired and the person leaves. He looks at the camera and goes, well, that's ruined this. Then he stands up and he's got an ostrich costume on underneath. That's comic relief. It's Red Nose Day. that's ruined this day then. just like that. I got dressed up just for this match.
Yeah.
A Three Lion or a Knight for the last 90 minutes. And now
got a plastic Dollarama a sword.
Yeah.
Carrying it around.
Gotta go home.
Yeah,
it's nothing worse, right? On the way home when you're wearing that jovial costume and you realize it's been nothing but heartbreak. It's the most awkward thing in the world, right? It must be like on the train going home, like crying, like it's like a mascot, an unhappy mascot.
Yeah, three solicitors, three 80-year-old old Mick Jagger.
The stages of grief he was going through in the loge.
Yeah, Mick Jagger was. I mean, he goes back. They've been showing him since '94.
When he was 94.
Yeah, he's pickled. He's going to be around until they win.
So, Mick looks sad. But wait, Mick always looks sad.
He's a fan. A little bit. Sure.
Yeah, it's almost like they were done in by the fact that they scored, and it was brilliantly executed on the break. It was Kane who played provider, Morgan Rogers, who I thought that looked like a stroke of genius for Tuchel before the apathy kind of set in after the goal was scored.
Yeah.
And then the ball that he whips in, the deft little touch by Princess Di coming in from the left side and Anthony Gordon. I just was like, oh my gosh, like this is it. So like they put up and Sharms, you said you were on red card watch. It never got to red card watch. And Elfaf, that's his name, right? The guy who's the MLS ref. I thought he eventually, once he settled into the match, I thought he gave good account of himself. I thought he kept everybody in check, but I was really worried early on, like in the third minute. I was like, oh, this thing's going off. Like, this is going to be like just cards all over the place here. And like the discipline, we're going to lose players. It's going to be like someone's going to get sent off here. And it didn't end up being that, but it was still chippy and it was Argentina trying to prevent any fluidity on England's behalf. So you wonder if maybe they don't get that goal. Maybe there still is a little bit of that bravery from a managerial perspective from Tuchel where he's going for it. Yeah. And you have to respect Argentina. Is not only do they have the quality to be able to deliver and they have the belief to know that they can still do it, but they get the equalizer and they want to step on your throat. They could smell the blood in the water at that point, right?
Respect, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Hard to turn it around at that point.
Yeah.
You
don't let it get to another break, right? And the chance for England to recover, rest, change things up. You're right. They capitalized. And they, kept coming. Clearly the better side after England scored.
So the secret is that I think moving forward, like, don't score them.
Wait till 86 or 87, right?
Like, then score.
Penalties. Lose on penalties.
Absolutely. Like, it's the worst thing England could have done was score the go-ahead goal. God, how pathetic.
But I don't get it. Like, we went with Eze last game, and then he was criticized for it, and he kind of made up for it with his substitutions later on in the Norway game. He kind of rectified it, right? And then he's got almost the free pass with a guy like Reece James, where he can move him from the back line to the midfield and back again if required. And you could do the same thing with Morgan Rogers, right? Where it's almost like carte blanche. You almost don't have to use a sub because you can move him from winger to the midfield. But he still had time to go big, to swing for something, you know, was Saka okay? I feel like I've asked this question over the course of the tournament. Was he ruled out for anything? Why was he unused? I know we talked about Rashford. He was only put in with Tony at the 90th minute. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like you had Saka on the bench. He was big on Madueke, and he, you know, that went over like a fart in church. You mentioned that expression this morning, Wonger, but I'm going to use it again. I thought that was a failed experiment on the right wing versus Norway. It was like where the attack went to die.
Yeah.
But you had him on the bench. You could use him in a different capacity when the game was crying out for energy and attacking energy, not just to sit back and absorb. Is so frustrating, and I'm not even an England fan, and I'm angry about it, Sharms.
Thank you.
Well, Dubs, I need to ask you and Craig then. They bring these three players in who are more athletically less inclined to be offensive. Does that make sense? Like less front-footed players.
Basically, well, by the fact that they're defenders.
They're defenders, but even on, you know, there's some defenders, as Jimmy has said, there's lots of defenders who also play an offensive game, right? Mm-hmm. Who can switch back and forth. But these are not those guys.
Well, O'Reilly could be potentially, yeah. But
O'Reilly maybe.
Burns and Conza for sure.
Yeah. And so they bring these guys in. All of a sudden, it just changes. And we've already said this, but as a player, when they bring them in, you're going, I can't, this guy cannot run up and break free and run the, you know, come back along the line. And they're not offensive players. I said to Craig, did we even see, once they scored, England scored the goal, more than a three pass activity, an action by England more than once or twice?
There was one where they broke, and I'm not sure what minute it was, but it was on the foot of Rodgers, and he had Bellingham running with him, maybe somebody else. It was never really like numerically where they were up. It was like a 3-on-2 or something. It was maybe like a 3-on-3, but it was would qualify as attacking transition. And he had space and he tried the shot and it was blocked and it went right back into Argentina and they just kept it and they marched up the field the other way.
That's right.
But I mean, that was it.
Yeah. I mean, when the coach makes those moves, the players know, okay, they're not coming on for us to be in attacking, having any attacking actions here. We are here to do one job, sit deep and defend. So that's the message being sent from the coach. Don't even think about it, boys.
Well, you couldn't even if you wanted to. That is my point. Like these are not the chess moves that allow you to go, oh, this guy's a knight. He can go diagonally.
No.
This guy, you know, this is a rook. Like, what are we talking
less
here?
Of those in a stance.
Yeah, and I get to show off that I play chess. But these are literally you're telling people it's like you're playing basketball and you're winning and you put the four shortest guys who can't shoot in grade 8 on. Oh, is this to lose the game? Like, that's how it felt. Sorry.
No, someone on Twitter, it was a great line. They said to me, they said, once again, Germany beats England. Yeah. Thanks. Another one. I got a response to my long hot shower tweet as well.
Yeah.
Nova Scotia Red says, nothing wrong with a long shower and a wank, mate. No need to make it public, though. I didn't mention anything about wank, just to be clear.
Right? Now you think of it.
Craig's in my bedroom. Get the hell out.
Yeah, where's the light switch? I don't want to look at myself.
No, you don't.
People are still on this, it's rigged for Messi to win nonsense. Like, how do you watch that game and say it's rigged for Messi? Yeah. Stop it. The referee did a decent job, right? And actually, I like that he kept the cards in his pocket. And the start. It could have kicked off. Yeah. I thought it was going to kick off, but he didn't. He talked to them. He got it back under control, like Dub said there. But people to say that this thing's rigged, like, just stop it. That's such a lazy narrative.
Tuchel would have to be part of the conspiracy.
Yeah, right?
Right.
Yeah, now I think about it.
Okay.
Maybe the
German trying to get that one back on him.
German, yeah. Germany and Argentina. Hey, they got a history there, apparently.
Yeah. There's it.
Don't they?
A wee bit.
More than perhaps we know.
There you go.
Do you, I mean, I want to talk more about Messi shortly, but with Tuchel, he signed up to go to Euro just before the World Cup, actually. There's lots of people right now. I'm looking. People are very emotional, including myself. But they're calling for his head, and they're saying he should be fired. They did make a World Cup semi-final. Up until this match, he had barely put a foot wrong. From the way he handled Jude Bellingham a few months ago to the subs in this World Cup, everything was going great. Everyone loved Thomas Tuchel. They loved him until about, what is it, 4 hours ago now. Yeah. Right?
They didn't love him going into the tournament, though, right?
No. Okay, that's fair. There were some question marks, perhaps.
Yeah.
But he won them over. Any naysayers, he won over, don't you think?
I feel similar to Ronald Koeman with the Netherlands, where I think a lot of criticism going in or concern about this defensive football. And then through the group stage and against teams that they were better than, the Dutch performed well. And then I think turned some heads and people started to get on board. And then they crash out and lose, and then all those guys are back, and then obviously he steps down. And I feel like there's some similarities here where the fan base maybe started to turn a little bit because of the success of England, and then the second we have this, I think a lot of people were saying "told you so," or had some of the concerns about the player selection coming into the tournament, and some of the tactics at times, and it's probably typical of these moments as well.
It is, yeah. I don't think now is the time to fire him, though, personally. You stick with him. You've got Nations League coming up.
Wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
You sleep on it, yeah.
Good night's sleep, yeah.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
But fuck,
World Cup semifinals come around. Not every 25, year.
22, 25, 22.
Yeah, it was a horror show, honestly.
Yeah.
See how it happens, though, right? And I guess that's where you go back to, like, I guess the style of play for these coaches, because in these moments, they have their tendencies and they'll want to do these things to get the results. And sometimes it works. And then times like this, it doesn't. There are some coaches that will want to go for that second goal and like make the attacking substitutions to hit on the counter and try to capitalize there. They may lose games as well where they're getting caught out because of these moves. It's tough to be so reactionary, I guess, in these moments.
Well, Asa, don't forget, Mexico, the down-up man, obviously, and they get very uber-defensive. I thought it was too early as well then, and they
could have
lost that game, but they didn't. They won it, and it's one of the most famous victories ever.
Yeah.
Let's give Thomas Tuchel a crown. And then against Norway, they sat deep against Norway as well. They bring on Dan Burns again, and it works. Remember that clearing header by Dan Burns? Big Dan Burns.
Step over and step over again.
Yeah.
He got it right. I didn't like it, but there's something different about this England.
Yeah.
So it worked for him then. He did the same thing this time around. It didn't work. Maybe because you're playing Argentina, a far superior team to Norway and Mexico.
Yeah.
But then it's hard to change that style, right? That has worked for them. But you're right. Yeah. Very different opponent.
If they had conceded against Mexico, they would have lost that one too.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. It's a little bit different, though, in the way that it's framed, though, because they're a player down, right? So there are excuses that can be made for choosing that.
Yeah, and altitude. Right?
Whereas
and all
this
these
one,
reasons,
it's very
and
hard.
And Norway, Haaland was done too, right? Haaland was the big force for Norway. Norway had all the ball, the possession, but Haaland wasn't the force because he was done. Messi was just like, reinvigorated, it seemed, at that point. So we got Messi
buzzing.
So we got a buzzing Messi now, Dubs, against the all-conquering Spain, who many people had going out in the semi-finals, but now they're the best team to have ever played the game. Can Argentina find a finger wag here? Why is my finger wagging? Oh, I know.
It's wagging the dog.
I know why.
Because it's World Cup Watch Canada, brought to you by Tim Hortons. It's game on with Tim's. Thank you, Charles.
All right. So can Argentina and their character, their resilience, Dubs, their resolve, are they really the only team that could bait a technically brilliant, gifted machine like Spain?
Did you say bait or beat? because
well, either one.
We just said wank, and now we're
I know just bring it where my circle. Mind went. I know. Well, it depends. Could be a very different game.
Well, they are the master baiters of the World Cup so far.
Craig is upstairs in my bedroom.
I don't know. I mean, as impressive as they looked, and they really did in the way that they beat England, the manner in which they did it, and they just looked like they could create glorious goal chances at will versus England, right? And so when this team's back is up against the wall, or the wall, they're able to deliver, and they've shown it time and time again. They showed it versus Cabo Verde, when that was going to be, you know, that was, they escape out of that by the skin of their teeth, right? They live to fight another day, and then they do it again versus Egypt. And then who did they play next?
Switzerland.
Throwing those. Switzerland. No,
Switzerland.
No, Switzerland.
No, Switzerland.
Oh my God.
Where again, they look dead and buried.
It's a lot
and
of
they're able to get through it with Julian Alvarez. I mean, it might just be Cabral's goal for Cabo Verde that might best him for goal of the tournament, right? I mean, it was just a brilliant strike. And then two more goals today, which one's better than the next. And again, set up by Leo Messi, who's on 8 goals and the tie break, which is 4 assists at this point. So it's incredible. Like, everybody sets it up, and you know what he can deliver when he's under pressure, and you know how brilliant he can be. But the fact that the entire team is able to do this again and again and again, I wouldn't put it past them to surprise Spain, because that's what it would be at this point. But you, given the way that Spain was able to dispatch of whom I thought was the best team in the world in France, with all of their weapons across that front line and the players on the bench who could also do damage, I think they're going to be in tough and on shorter rest. But again, I think the final that I thought was going to be is actually the third place match, is actually England versus France. So I think they're both going to recover. And obviously this English team has to go back to Miami in that heat, in that humidity, 3 days to turn around and to get their heads in order and their bodies in a position where they can actually fight and battle this French team, who have to do the same things themselves. But the final, I think it's absolutely Spain's to lose. But Argentina right now just looks like a runaway train on their way to defending their title.
Yeah. I don't think that, you know, I'm going to go the other way and say they're not going to be close to Spain. I think Spain's going to control it from top to front, top to back. I just think they're too good. They're too good. I think they'll step on them. And when you talk about when they get a goal up, they're going to step on their throat. I'm telling you, they're just 80% of what they did against France, they'll beat Argentina.
Yeah. We said the same thing about France, didn't we, against Spain? Some of us anyway, right? It's a weird World Cup, but I think you're right. Let me see. Keep talking. I look at the odds right now on BetMGM as far as who is the favorite right now.
I think the tricky thing about Argentina is I think they're really annoying to play against as well. Like, they are chippy. They're at your heels. They're in your face. And I'm curious to see how Spain would handle that. Like, I think they can, and they're obviously, they'll keep the ball, and they frustrate teams as well. But Argentina is going to leave a little extra in there. And then they have, we talked about Messi in those moments at the end of games. He reminds me of like the great basketball players where you want them with the ball, with last possession. And it's like, yeah, Jordan has it at the end. I like our chances. I think we win. Mm-mm. You know, Kawhi, LeBron, these guys, they're just like, okay, just give it to them. And Messi felt like that for the last 10 or 15 minutes, where you get in the ball, things are going to happen, and the team knows it. So I think if they're within a goal or they're tied, like, it's just, it's hard to bet against.
He also had the ball the whole time. He was like the Harlem Globetrotter out there. He was like spinning it, and he could have.
Well,
done,
that's the amazing thing about Messi, right? How smart he is, because he obviously knew quite early on in that second half he wasn't having much luck going through the middle, right? So he just stuck himself on that right wing and did his magic there.
Yeah,
and I love that. I hate that, but I love that, because it's just shows his IQ level. He's not trying. He figures it out. Okay, you know what? That's not my office today. That'll be my office next week at Inter Miami. Right now, my office is going to be out here, and I know where Enzo's going to be. I know where Lautaro's going to be.
Yeah.
And he just he destroyed England from there.
Yeah, he kills them. Both of them, he draws help. He gets help. Every time he gets the ball, usually two will come over. And then he finds the gap that's basically left because your attention shifted that way. Like, I think the one that crashes down to provide help on the Enzo goal comes off of Enzo. Like, it's really smart too. Like, he frees up his teammates and creates these assists.
I was just going to say to Craig though, like Enzo took three, I think it was three long shots prior to his goal. And he was smiling. And even he had a wry smile over at Messi. And I was thinking about Craig when we were talking about the keeper for England and just going, hey, yeah, just going, does that change when you know these guys have that in them? How does that affect you? Because all of a sudden, if Messi's happy that you're taking this 30-yarder, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're on your toes all the time. You don't know which way things are going. How do you approach that?
Well, what he was really mad about after was the fact of how slow they were to get out to the edge of the box to close him down, put him under some pressure. If you close him down, he's probably not even going to take that option. But the fact that he was 25, 26 yards out and nobody was closing him down, and with a strike that he's got, some people were blaming Pickford a little bit. I don't know. I couldn't go that far to say I would blame him on it. I tell you, I think it was one of those shots that he might have been unsighted, but also with the fact that it probably looked as though it was more within his body sphere, if you like. And it was swerving, out to the other, but with a ton of pace on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you see Jude Bellingham? There's a slow motion of Jude Bellingham on the ground afterwards, and he lip read. He says something like, "It was right down the middle."
Really?
Yeah. Now again, you never know what's true and what. No. Yeah, no, that's it, right? It crossed my mind the way he said, "Is it AI?" Because it's kind of a damning.
I don't know, but he's the one who's late to the pressure.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's the one that doesn't close, he's so too, close as well.
Yeah,
I think it was Jude who lunges in there, and then it's O'Reilly and it's Spence on the other one where Messi just shapes his body differently, and you never think that he's going to chop it back onto his right foot.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Because, he's just never done brilliant. That before.
To Wonger's point, he's like, give me the rock.
Yeah,
give it to me.
I'm here.
Yeah. Argentina are the underdogs, as we expected, in the final, plus 240. The Spain paying plus 130 on BetMGM. Hmm. As for the third place game, France are the favorites at minus 102. You can get England at plus 250, but who gives a flying crap about that? Anyway? Who cares about the third place game? Name one person that gives a damn about it.
Yeah, no, just neither team is going to care.
Team, fly home. Yeah.
And the clubs don't care now at this point. They're just get back. We got a season that starts in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. It doesn't stop. Watch. A bunch of these guys are going to fall like flies around October, November.
Yep.
Yeah.
They are. It's just wrong. Too much. It's too much.
Yep. Yeah. It was a stupid, terrible World Cup it is.
No, I think to Ace's point, and maybe Sharms, you were tuned out because you're looking for the odds, but the way that Argentina made it very difficult for England to get any fluidity in their possession and just to play freely. Like that they knew as soon as they received, if they were hanging on to it for an extra second, they were going to get chopped, right? Whether it was Simeone, who's got a face that I would love to punch, it should be said.
Look at that.
Yep, 100%. Yeah. And so I'm corrected. So I talked about Simeone not necessarily being a full kit wanker in the private box, like wearing his own kit. I'm like, what's that about? Where he's wearing his kid's kit. So you're okay, Diego, I guess. But they're going to figure out a way to wind up Spain.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to figure out a way to get in their heads, to get in their little bubbles, their hula hoops. They're going to figure out how to do it, to get on Rodri, to tackle him, to get studs up on him, to like kind of toe that line and force the referee into some decisions so they can start to tip the scales towards themselves. And the later that game gets, or like the deeper it goes, the more it's going to favor the defending champs. I'm telling you.
I think it's going to go the other way. I think that Spain is going to control the game. They're going to be clipped and they're going to play their game right out of the gates and get a few bookings for Argentina. And it's going to turn on their completely turn it up on their upside down.
Yeah. Honestly, I hope it's that for us. Yeah. I just, at this point, I don't see it going that way.
Dubs, you said, I think it's you said that you didn't know, but you found out in the semifinal that you were a France fan. Just watching them, you realized. In the final, do you know who you're supporting? Anyone? You got to kind of root for someone. Or you generally do. And I hate to admit this, but I've got a real nasty feeling it's going to be Argentina just because of Leo Messi. Because I want to see him get a second at World Cup. And I, trust me, I don't feel clean saying that.
Good, you shouldn't. Good, you need another shower.
Even hotter one. Maybe a cold shower, according to that last commenter. Yeah. But I think, I don't know for sure, because I really like Spain. A lot about them. I want to see them have a dynasty. European champions, World Cup champions. It's like 08, 10, and 12 all over again. It's brilliant. Even though they don't play the most champagne-y football, it's still brilliant. But I just have a feeling, knowing that my deep-seated love for Leo Messi, which I had to put on hold for 90 minutes today, which wasn't easy, but I didn't like him very much. Mm-hmm. I got a suspicion when they kick off on Sunday, it's going to be like, come on, Messi. Get your last one and your last World Cup. Let's just pour concrete around that legacy. Not that we need to, but let's pour concrete around it. What do you think?
Spain hopes he gets caught in concrete in those boots.
Well, with Simeone around, you know.
Yeah, well, they wouldn't play champagne football, Charm, Spain. They'd play Cava football, right?
Oh, sorry. That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Only if you're from Champagne, can you call it champagne, right? No. Well, I'm just worried. I think Spain was potentially at their best versus France. So can they replicate that type of performance? Will they need all of it to Forest Point? I think they are absolutely the better team going into this. But I just think, like, it's really hard to stop what Argentina has continually been able to conjure in order to get past all of these teams that are so different in the way way that they offer a challenge for them. What do you think, Asa? Like, I'm rooting for Messi, but I am not rooting for Argentina.
That's my question. So you are.
Yeah. But it's different. I feel like Messi is his own entity.
Mm. Yeah.
And I want Messi to do well, but if you take it as Messi and company, I very much want Spain to win.
Did Messi have the Falklands flag? Did he have the Falklands flag, or was his teammates?
I don't know.
Ooh. Yeah. They're in trouble. They're going to get fined, or maybe they'll be stripped of the match by Infantino.
And, yeah, not until after the match. Yeah.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Suspended. Yeah.
I like both sides. Like, I like the greatness angle, and I like seeing teams, dominate in the way that Spain has here. And then Messi on the other side of it. I can get behind that as well, because I don't understand how Cristiano Ronaldo people can watch this and not acknowledge how great Lionel Messi is.
I know.
And they'll let us know in the comments, I'm sure.
Because they're idiots.
Because you look at this guy, he's just doing it here, 39 years old, continuing to do this. It's incredible. Because I think, having played at the low levels that I have, one of the first things that goes is that, like, the speed, that little twitch, the first that burst. And to, like, be able to push and get around people. Yet Messi at 39 is still able to do that part. Like, he hasn't had to really change his game too much. Like, he's still pushing past people, getting around people, and strong on his feet as well. For all the diving there is in the game and all the dark arts, this guy just keeps fighting through challenges. It's hard not to root for him. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think I'll just enjoy it as a neutral and not really hope for anyone. Just hope for great football. How's that for a fantastic
answer? No, 3-3 extra time.
Yeah, who do you want to see win? Do you have a feeling that where your heart will be on the day?
I want the best team to win. Whoever plays the best football.
No
controversy. Yeah.
Just pick one.
Well, I think it's Spain, but I don't have any feelings towards.
Well, make some. Throw $10 down on BetMGM and then put it on Spain. And then all in.
Crazy goalkeeper. Right. And he can't ever side with someone that scored 800, 900 goals in his career. Right. It's different for him. He's traumatized watching this.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to be the thousandth goal.
Mm-hmm. See, Pickford.
Mean, going into the semis, though, like, I think I would have enjoyed, like, any of the final four, like the French and their attacking style and everything. Like, I would get behind England finally getting it done as well. Like, there's a lot, they're great stories for all four of them. So, best place to be as a neutral and just enjoy all of it.
I agree.
I'd like to see Spain pushed. Like, they've only conceded the one goal, right? Only one goal has gotten past Simon into Ketelaar. And they were forced to respond versus Belgium. So I'd like to see Spain kind of pushed a little bit and, like, out of their comfort zone, whatever that looks like, whether it's through physicality or combativeness or shithousery market, 43-15, like whatever dark arts, or maybe it's supreme play, you know, maybe Argentina are able to outpossess them. I don't see that happening, but, you know, do something brilliant and it translates into goals. And then Spain are forced to push forward and the game opens up a little bit and we get a brilliant final. I don't think I'd care who wins at that point.
You've seen the photograph, right, of Messi and baby Yamal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to see that a lot the next few days, I think.
That's an incredible
picture. Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know. That's what I thought too. No, it's legit, apparently. Yeah. It's legit, apparently. Hey, Asa, do you think Messi, if he wins on Sunday, do you think he gets a Ballon d'Or?
Oh. That would be interesting. What are the dates for, like, how much would they value the MLS accomplishments, I guess, would be the interesting part. Like, is it just right?
So then no.
Right. So it would all just be based off of the World Cup, which
often is a World Cup.
Incredible.
Cannavaro.
Yeah. It's an incredible run. Yeah.
I think he might. Things are rigged. Right? That might well be rigged. And I don't think many people would have an argument against that. If they gave it to him, if he won the World Cup on a strong performance, because no one had him in the conversation before the World Cup, right? Yeah. He wasn't even mentioned.
And if he wins, there's no one else on his own team that would jump ahead of him, right? So yeah, probably.
What about, do you think there'd be a possibility of Messi winning if they go on to win? They go on to beat Spain. They win the World Cup. They're back-to-back champions. Would Messi potentially be the first person, or I don't think anyone else has done this, to win the Golden Boot and the Golden Ball?
Ooh. Has no one done that before?
I don't think anybody has.
Who won it last time? Was it Mbappe? Mm.
Go longer.
It's Mbappe,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Mbappe won the Golden Ball last time.
Well, okay.
Was there a Golden Ball when Pelé played? Was it even a thing?
No, I don't think there was.
No. So 2018, France won it. Who got the Golden Ball that year?
No, yeah, now we're getting too many questions. We should stick to one.
But we should
buy time while Wagner gets the one.
I shouldn't have asked the question.
2018, Golden Boot.
Modric won the Golden Ball in 2018.
Yeah, Golden Ball, but Golden Boot.
Oh, sorry. Golden Boot.
Harry Kane won the Golden Boot in 2018.
Okay, yeah. In 14, when Germany won.
Well, you didn't ask 14.
Oh, let's put up Wikipedia.
And you put up Golden Ball and Boot?
Yeah, let's do both.
I'm not good at that. I'm not good at this internet thing.
Under pressure.
Messi won at the 2014 World Cup. He won the Golden Ball for best player, and James Rodriguez won the Golden Boot.
Oh, Jesus. Wow. Okay, and 2010, when Spain won it, Golden Boot, I got a feeling it was... Oh, no, I don't have a feeling it was. Gone now.
It was there. Oh.
It was...
Forlan?
Yeah, Diego Forlan, Uruguay, wasn't it?
And
that's a good one.
And AC, you should know this. Who won Golden Boot that year in 2010? Currently plays for the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Thomas Muller.
There we go.
Sebastian Bearhalter.
Yeah.
I'm just to wrap the whole Messi thing. I'm so happily surprised that he's raised his game to this level in the World Cup. I knew he was great, but you can't really judge his form with Inter Miami, really. Because as Craig will tell us, the defending in MLS isn't quite top quality. He's in a great league at this point in his career to dominate and keep the brand alive. But to see him raise his game to what he's done at the World Cup, Craig, I don't think anyone really saw it coming. Did they? I thought he'd be good. He'd be a story, but not this good.
No. I mean, we talked about it as leading in, the month leading into the World Cup, his performances at Miami were up there. It was like he's got back to his best. He's going to have a third or fourth wind here and do really well at the World Cup. So he's scoring over a goal a game in MLS. I think that would come into play no matter what level of league it is.
And then if he wins the World Cup and if he's in the final and he's actually effective and he does like what he did today or even scores a goal, I think hands down he's in the conversation.
Asa, before we leave today, obviously you're based in Vancouver and the World Cup has now left Vancouver. Mm. Overall, vibes. I was there. It was incredible. But as someone that knows Vancouver before and after the World Cup and during the World Cup, did it reach the expectations you thought it would? Did it surpass them? How was it?
Yeah, I think it exceeded expectations overall. It took a little while for even like the fan zone to get set up and really get a sense or feeling for like what was coming here. And then, once the game started, people showing up at the Fan Fest and you had great crowds and these viral moments and players partying in the streets and, you know, all these moments that I think really, kind of put a spotlight on Vancouver. And then going to the one New Zealand-Belgium game was a great experience as well. And then kind of being in there, and BC Place felt different as well, you know, from being at these games. Like,
it's great.
Something about the grass, like it was awesome. So, and I do think that there's a buzz now, not just here in BC, but the Vancouver Whitecaps match against Cavalry in the Canadian Championship second leg. I heard from people there that it felt different as well. So I feel like there is something that's happened here. Got more eyeballs, more people interested that were not as interested before. So that's been good, but still like curious to see what happens in the next sort of couple months after this tournament is officially done, not just once England's no longer in contention, but like actually over this weekend.
It was a bit the same in Toronto. So like just prior to it, I was a little concerned. It just didn't seem to have a feel or a World Cup buzz that something massive was about to happen until it actually started.
Yeah.
Or a week before, maybe not even a week, when the national team showed up, it was still pretty quiet.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the Bosnians started showing up and the Canadian fans started
showing up.
And there was just this unbelievable buzz downtown, walking around, seeing everybody's in a great mood, no trouble whatsoever. In fact, at the game, there was some trouble with the Bosnians and having a flag that the police didn't want them to have. That was literally it. Talking to police officers game five, they were like, yeah, we had that trouble in the first game. And other than that, there hasn't been trouble anywhere. And that's what so when that happened, it was interesting because then they leave and then in come the Panamanians.
Yeah.
And then Ghanaians come in as well, Cote d'Ivoire. It was like a circle, like just a revolution, a door just revolving around. The Germans showed up, you know, and then eventually, obviously, the Croatians and Portugal was just sensational.
Yeah, so cool to see. The Colombian crowd here was really neat, too, because I think a lot of it is just like the locals, the local Colombians as well, because it was before the Colombia-Switzerland match here, where we saw massive crowds at the Canada Soccer House in North Vancouver. I went there for one of the games. And looking at my phone after, the FIFA fan zone at P&E was packed with Colombian fans as well. So they're like just tens of thousands of fans all over at all these fan zones enjoying this World Cup. And in talking to people, like soccer people, guys that I'm playing with, playing pickup and stuff, they're all hoping that this now happens for other tournaments. Like they would open up this fan zone at the amphitheater or wherever to watch Gold Cup. Qualifier. I don't know, like anything. I think it'd be cool though, right?
Yeah.
We had a moment.
I'm sorry.
You're in a weird place, it should be said.
But hey, listen, I hope they fill it. I do.
For Canada games?
Canada against Honduras?
Shouldn't they?
Yeah. Do you really think they'll fill it?
I don't know. Like,
we can't even fill the stadiums with our own fans.
But people are asking. People are obviously curious and enjoying.
No, you're right.
I'm with Asa. Give people the opportunity.
Yeah, because I think that the thing I learned from this as well is that people want to have a good time and go out. Even if you're not a soccer fan, you like to cheer for the home team, root for the home team, put on the colors, buy a jersey and learn something about this game and then cheer when the guy you just learned about scores, right? Like I think...
Yeah.
that's kind of what we want from these things. And yeah, Canada, Honduras at the amphitheater is the perfect place to do it.
Well, you build a community around it too. Like we've seen what has happened with all the Canadian supporters groups. It's a community. They literally socialize together. They get together. It's a reason to, you know, get involved, and they thoroughly enjoy it. Win, lose, or draw.
Like I said, I hope you're right. And I really believe that there is
a nation in this country.
I get a little bit cynical as we get further away from Canada's ouster of the World Cup.
And England, especially.
But you're seeing there's still interest. There's still interest, right? And you're seeing some good scenes, right? But the vibe is dying down for obvious reasons, as it will anywhere, I'm sure. I just really still have a little bit of concern about how much of this we're going to be able to hold on to post-World Cup. How many more people have we actually grabbed to fill, for example, the amphitheater for a Gold Cup game in February when Canada play Honduras, you know? Prove me wrong, and I hope you're right.
It's a great question. Like, I'm curious to see if they would ask for that, if there'd be calls for that, because I do think that people like this Canada team and want to support it and enjoy watching them do well. I think that there is an audience for it. So, we'll find out, I guess, at the next games for Canada.
Well, Canada Soccer, get these players out there still, right? Keep them in front of everyone. Mm-hmm. Keep doing that. That's the marketing department that's got a big job on their hands with less money now, obviously, post-World Cup. But I'm sure they've got plans for it. It's still going to be a big year next year, right? We've got the Women's World Cup. We've got Nations League. We've got, you know, U20 men's in 2 weeks' time, a week's time. Mm-hmm. There's stuff happening still. We'll be covering it in depth. In every capacity here. Very quickly, Asa, what is happening with the Whitecaps? Some big news this past week, or potentially some big news regarding off the field.
Yeah, the BC Place deal. This is something that they've been working on for a while. It's basically operations of BC Place. So that's still something that they're working on negotiating. I think that this will be good for the club going forward. And I do wonder how much the World Cup has maybe kind of impacted this as well, seeing the opportunities potentially for the Whitecaps to control more of the operations and make more money. I don't know what that'll mean. It could be more expensive tickets as well and more premium packaging, I should say. But that is something that I got to experience at that Belgium-New Zealand game. And you can see how this could potentially help the club. You have these like premium seats and these experience packages. Whether or not it's corporate, it is something that would definitely benefit the club. And yeah, a lot of positives for the Whitecaps going forward. So hopefully a sold out crowd for this LAFC game, the next home game, August 1st, and back in MLS action, it's Thomas Muller versus Lewandowski, Chicago. Ooh, on Thursday.
Right. So
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And we have hope. We have hope.
Hope. And that's the hope that kills you.
Exactly.
Sharmans will tell you.
But it's nice to have that still in Vancouver.
Because run the stadium. Do it.
They got to stay. They got to stay.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, maybe an idea would be season ticket holders get a free ticket to the amphitheater for the Gold Cup watch party.
You have to start connecting the dots.
You do.
Right? So it's not just the next thing for a Canadian men's national team. It's the women's national team. It's the youth teams. It's NSL. It's CPL. It's Canadian MLS franchises and clubs. It's all of that together is the same soccer landscape. It's the same ecosystem that we have to continue to push and to grow and create buzz and interest. And it's getting people say that you're turned on by this. You enjoyed following this team for this. Yes, it's a global tournament and nothing else will come close. Mm-hmm. But you want a taste of something similar, here's this, you know, and get them turned on to it, because that's the way you do it. That's the way you kind of spread everything out.
Don't be a bandwagoner. They just show up every 4 years. It's a pretty cool sport, right? Mm-hmm. You'll love it more in 4 years' time when you know the players, you know their stories, and you follow them. You'll love it a lot more.
Yeah.
You discovered, you know, Jeevan Babwell watching a Caps game. And then guess what? He's starting in the midfield in 2030, you'll love him even more. You love the team. Like that's fun. That's what we're lacking right now in this country. We're seeing some women's team players, big names, going to the NSL right now. Mimi Aladu, for example, get out there, watch the roses, right?
Because I think you're talking to the choir.
Yeah, maybe. Well, you know, if you're driving with your family, put this on. Actually, don't do that. Actually, forget I said that.
No, no, this is good. If you're listening to us on SiriusXM right now, you're going to be happy that you are, because we are just follow along with the podcast after this. Look us up. We're doing daily shows. You're going to find Footy Prime. We'll always convince you to do things with us.
Yeah. And we don't look down on people that are getting into the game. Right, Dan?
You do. You're 6'5". It's natural.
But Wonger was that person. He's the person to ask questions that, you know, for people that don't know the game that well. And actually, we should talk about those things too, because it's very complex.
100%. Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary.
Footy Prime is brought to you by BetMGM. Make it legendary. Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
What a strange day it was. What a terrible day it was. Let's hope tomorrow's better.
There's no games.
I know.
Thank Christ for that.
Weird limbo.
Thanks, everybody, for jumping on tonight.
Yeah, thanks, Asa.
Yep. Yeah. How's Binky doing?
Thanks, Bill.
Same? Doing okay?
Oh, Binky seems to be hanging in there, but Charlie painted the whole bedroom.